spooky time, and so we are indeed calling on the spirits, so we're going to presume we're on the air, even though in Washington, D.C., Tel Aviv, and Cape Town, we can't quite hear Pacifica, but you can hear us, may it be so. So we are gathering this waxing full moon. It is indeed a time for all allies to connect, to be in cahoots, to increase our influence. You know, we love to say some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. So we say the protoplasm of reality is particularly susceptible to imprint right now. We are animating the desirable story. So let's presume we are all assigned our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignments, which we can empathically transcend. We're going to thematically talk about crossing borders on every kind of level, literal and symbolic, until there are no borders. No passports, no borders, certainly no walls, absolutely. So the dissolving of borders. You know, we borrow from all syncretic traditions, and the great teachings of Hawaii are Ho'oponopono, to dream the world back to its deepest core, you know, and then heal it, and then reanimate the desirable story, to heal the world from inside out, to aspire to become the other. So, more than perfectly, this week we welcome from Tel Aviv our great ally. You'll have to correct my pronunciation, Yehuda.
Okay, I'm here.
Yehuda Attai, to present this really thrilling story of the one-state solution, the Palestinian-Israeli-Israeli-Palestinian state, and perpetually vice versa, Israeli-Palestinian, Palestinian-Israeli, solution-resolution. And because this will boggle our minds, because so few people and so few Americans have heard this idea, you know, it is boggling the mind, and the obstacles arise, the obstacles of reactive vengeance. We are also joined from Cape Town, South Africa, by our great Sangoma agent of peace and fellow astrologer, Rod Suskin, that he may add South African truth and reconciliation medicine to this brew. Welcome, Rod.
Great to be here as always, Caroline.
That's great. So we're still a little bit mystery. We are presuming that we're connecting to a gazillion people out there in the world, but we will energetically. It's like when we couldn't connect, I said, well, why not light the umpepu, and then we were all connected. So you did. Rod, just tell us also, you know, muti, umpepu, definition of power.
Well, for us in Africa and in our spiritual tradition, power really comes from the ancestors and from nature itself. So one of the things that we do is we focus our energy through things like the sacred herb in Pepu that you just mentioned, and in that way connect with the will of the ancestors. And for us, the bottom line of the will of the ancestors is about people respecting each other and respecting nature and the world.
Yes, and the way...
Oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah, yes, it's great. And the way I've understood it, that we want to put on our council, our work table for all of us allies, is that, you know, our ancient indigenous self knows that we don't source power. We invite it by words, by radio shows, by dedication, and then we direct it by the power of story and blessing. May it go here and may it go there. And that the modern world's complete misunderstanding, kerfuffle, is that it mistakes dominance, control, reaction, and rage for power. So I've always understood that as part of the Muti teaching, that it is medicine and it is power and healing. You know, true power is that which heals. So Yehuda, it's particularly pertinent to speak to you in Tel Aviv right now. Again, Tel Aviv, South Africa, Washington, California, on out into the world, because today, you know, the Washington Post headline, you know, Israel mourns, Hezbollah exults. It's this exchange, the living and the dead and the living across borders. Whew. Tell us, animate this for us.
Well, actually, the country in the last 2 days is totally engaged with this sad situation whereby the war continues in a way, and the mourning continues in the way, and everyone is actually is concentrating on pain on the Israeli side. Well, on the Hezbollah side, they see it as a liberation, as a winning, and so on. But as I said,
And the way I look at this, I see it as a wound. You know, something has to be healed in the soul of these different communities, and to understand the background and the way to move forward. And here comes this bigger idea that actually hasn't been yet on the table and being discussed openly here in Israel, about the fact that we should live together. We are living together with each other, and we are having the same kind of pain and the same kind of happiness and the same kind of desires and hopes and so on. And it makes sense that we should make one state, from the sea to the river, from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordanian River. And we are essentially bound through history. We are bounded through our ancestors. We are connected to the same land, which is in the heart of many other people around the world. And this way we are protecting each other by the mere fact that we live together. And in fact, in reality, when you look at reality, and I see reality as an ever-present evolving energy with an infinite number of possibilities, and that we can also intervene in the possibilities that open for us to open up for change, to start a change in the whole process. So essentially what we are provocating, and we are trying to bring up to the table in the Israeli media, is the discussion of one state. And we have like 1.5 million Israeli Palestinians living in Israel today, and about 3.5 million Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza. And maybe with the return of the Palestinians after an agreement will be achieved, maybe will be more or less like 10 million people living within each other. Maybe we don't have to. And by living within each other and together, we don't even have to build walls and cut cities and continue this kind of occupation for 40 years. And we should be at the state where we understand the Nakba, the fact that when the Zionist movement came to Israel to establish a state at that time, we created a displacement, and we created a situation whereby about 500 Arab villages have been evacuated, and many of them have been destroyed, and many others Israeli settlements have been being built. And we have to understand that we have to understand what we did, and we also have to understand that we have to understand the pain of the Palestinians on that issue, and there is a reconciliation that can be made on that issue. And we have to let the Palestinians who live in camps or abroad, any one of them, to come back. Even the Palestinians themselves conducted the surveys among their diaspora, and they found out that maybe 500,000 Palestinians will come to the greater Israel-Palestine, from the sea to the river. Maybe. Israel itself, on half of the size of the area, received more than 1 million Russian immigrants in 10 years and was able to absorb them. So this is not an issue, and it can be solved. It just needs leadership that understands that for the security of the people and for the tranquility, for the peace of the people to live their daily life, that is a solution that is doable.
And when you first presented this astounding a bold experiment, going, oh, you know, the mind does boggle. But you in our private backstage conversation, you said, you know, one state, exactly as you said, since we have to have states and someday maybe not, you know, but Yes, no borders from the sea to the Jordan River, intertwined. So the reward is security. No place to bomb, everything intertwined. And what you'd also said, I just want to put this on the table for all of us, and we can animate it and go, oh. And when I asked you again about, you know, a democracy, and you said, well, the numbers are actually perfect. You know, 5 million Israeli Jews, 1.5 million Israeli Arabs living there, right of return to everyone with recompense. This will take some time. We're going to bring Rod in on this one. And you said, and this new state of bold experiment would give Jerusalem to the world.
Yes.
Yeah, this is breathtaking.
I think Jerusalem could be the first city of the world. We should also allocate some, you know, pieces of land, few acres here and few acres there, to allow different people in the world, like Buddhist or Japanese or others, to build their halls of prayers in Jerusalem. I think that everybody will enjoy it. Everybody, I don't think the city will be filled with people around the world that will come to live there. I think the Jerusalemites will live in Jerusalem and the rest will come to visit, and everybody will definitely will benefit out of it. Not only that, the cost of security comes down, the tension comes down in the entire area of the Middle East. I take the view that we have to conduct actions that reduce fear. Fear is the cheapest manipulative element that politicians use to stray people away from the real issues. And as such, we are also, as I told you, working on the fact that the entire Middle East area should be a free zone area of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
And on this issue we are working too, and we are putting it on the table. And just a week ago we brought up to the air a site, an internet site in Hebrew to the Israelis on the fact that, in fact, there is no deterrence. There is a death threat in the area in terms of weapons of mass destruction, and it is in the interest of all the people here to understand that we have to defuse it by going into a free zone area, and we should push for it rather than escalate and threaten other countries from attempting to think about weapons of mass destruction, while it is well known all over the world that Israel has weapons of mass destruction. And me, as an Israeli citizen, I think that Israel should, the politicians in Israel should take the responsibility and take their energies and all the sources they have to convince world leaders in the U.S., in China, in Russia, in the European community, that is in the interest of the entire world that the Middle East should be free of weapons of mass destruction. And it is in the interest of the people in the Middle East, and it is in the interest of the entire people of the world. And as we will lift this fear that exists here amongst us that lives in this area, the moment this fear is being relieved, I think that that opens up more and more faster ways towards peace and understanding, towards this development of one democratic state.
Yes, and we want to come right back to weapons of mass destruction. Who has what? The symposium you conducted in Israel and the dialogue you had with the Israeli military and government, who first tried to suppress the symposium, and then they all came. But we want to come to that, but also to one of the. When I tell this version of the story to people, people at first, of course, go, well, no, because, oh. And so we want to begin to address some of the issues. What, one of the things you, the rewards, so there's the fear and the like, no, it is our, you know, it is only a Jewish state, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but the rewards, safety, and also, as you mentioned, you know, the Israeli-Palestinian, Palestinian-Israeli state gives Jerusalem to the world. Come, all dedicated to peace. This is a place of pilgrimage. And as you said, in an important way, it becomes a positive, sacred, holy cash cow for the entire Middle East, Jerusalem.
Absolutely.
With everyone coming in. And I want to turn to Rod, because then people go, oh, okay, right of return. Everybody gets to come back. We're going to do this experiment. And then the mind boggles and goes, whoa, how long? What is the process whereby you would metabolize sufficient poison and vengeance and enmity so that everyone mixing wouldn't blow each other up? And I want to turn to Rod, as you lived through the bold experiment of South Africa on that medicine, when people surely said, no, there will be so much violence. Okay, so can you just sort of bring some of the South African Sangoma medicine into this conversation at this point?
You know, my reaction when you first told me about what Yehuda was talking about, I did experience that no followed by the wow, but I think quite quickly, because it did strike me immediately, that why is it that no one's really thought that probably the only possible solution for Israel must be the only other time this has worked, and that is South Africa. And South Africa was exactly, as you say, a striking experience. When we all realized that it all works towards the fact that there was going to be democratic election, as much as everyone thought that idea was fantastic, everyone was terrified, and I think more people left the country in the years leading up to the coming democratic solution than at any other time. But there was an alchemy that no one could possibly have anticipated, and that is especially the fact that this is a land that honors an ancestral spirit, which is also exactly true of Israel, the oldest ancestral spirit of all. So what happened was that when we finally did get this democratic thing together, this transformation happened, and everyone surpassed those differences. The fact is that the spirit is the ancestors. It is the ancient people that we honor. And so it practiced what it preached. When we all sat down and started treating each other like human beings and talking to each other, we realized that because we're ancient friends, we've always lived in this country together, we speak the same language. And of course, it strikes me that the same is true for the Arabs and the Jews, that they've shared that land together for thousands of years and they know each other as brothers. And it's a radical solution, but let's face it, all the other dialogue kind of solutions didn't work there and didn't exist here or work here, because when people dialogue in the way that it's been done, this negotiated two-state kind of settlement, it always struck me that it was always done by outsiders, that it was always for the scoring of political points, and that you hardly ever heard from the people of Israel themselves. You heard from the radicals on all sides. But, you know, the people of Israel are always knew to be an essentially democratic people. And that's what's so exciting to me, to hear Yehuda, because I recognize what happened in this country. And that there was this impossible dream that the more you thought about it was the only obvious solution. And the fact is that 14 years down the line, we have a lot of the problems of regular countries. But in terms of political security and former enemies, those problems have been transcended.
Ah, so we remind ourselves that if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, number two, two things is perfect, either or of anything, you know, any opposition. And what two needs, therefore, is what we're doing, what we're brewing now, the unifying story, going, we're all part of this large pulsing dream. I'm going to take a short moment to remind our great listeners that it is the full moon. This particular full moon is the full moon Capricorn Cancer of extending kinship. It is the full moon of the dedicated work of reverence for life. It is full of power. And so it's a great experiment on behalf of KPFA to say, all right, we're not going to like rah, 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 you know, do fund drive. We're just going to invite those who've never subscribed to this station or this show before, to go, oh, ollie, income free, new friends, friend drive, new allies. Absolutely. We remember Br'er Rabbit, Trickster. We are dedicated to the compassionate trickster within all of us. We are dedicated to the goddess Pacifica, dynamic peace. And Br'er Rabbit says, there was times when all the creatures used to gather to sagacuate, just like they remembered they were all family, just like there hadn't been any hard times, just like they remembered, again, they were all kin. So that's what we're doing with our great ally, Yehuda Atai from Tel Aviv right now, and Rod Susskind from Cape Town, South Africa, and me, Caroline Casey, in Washington, D.C., and connected for 12 years to KPFA, you know, every week, as we bring in, again, you know, these other kinds of storytellings, going, whoa, here's the unifying story. So, you know, here's what we're pitching to you, which is, yes, become a friend of KPFA. It is a community of those dedicated to dynamic peace. We're looking to get to, 1,000 new subscribers so that we don't have to preempt any programming. Next week, we'll be having the Visionary Activist Show. We'll be doing a 2-hour special, which is going to be really seriously fun, with Vincent Bugliosi and the prosecution of George W. Bush. That's a good story, because it would be good for him. It's good for to bring tyrants to account. And John Burdett, author of Bangkok Haunts, one of the most fabulous Buddhist noir novels ever going, all incredibly pertinent. So right now, you know, you can become a member of KPFA by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732 or pledging online, secure. We have so many really great listeners on the web around the world. I've seen maps sometimes where you go, ooh, hello Australia, Canada, the far north, sometimes Syria, England, hello, all across America. We go, ooh, you know, every season when we do a fund drive, there are the usual suspects. Gods love them. Spirits back them up, you know. But now we're saying, well, you know, you who've never pledged before but are part of the team, absolutely. You know, we know that we vote for reality in many ways, and certainly on what we spend time with. So this is a real pledge, and also a symbolic pledge, to join a community, to feel supported, you know, to give back, absolutely. So what we have is, there's a $25 member pack, you know, and you get, the usual, whatever it is, KPFA t-shirt, you know, new logo, bumper sticker, what the hell. There's also a $60 public affairs, you know, t-shirt, tank shop, 6-hour DVD of recent KPFA events, most of which are really terrific. Speeches by Naomi Klein, Amy Goodman, David Goodman, Jim Hightower. Oh, Christopher Hitches, Chris Hedges, the debate on religion. That was all right. It was really challenging, though. And there's, of course, a $120 sustainer pack, which gets you the DVD of the 11th Hour on Global Warming, stainless steel bottle, all those things. But again, that's by calling 1-800-439-5732. Or 510-848-5732 or kpfa.org. This is an experiment so that we can go back to our guests right now and go, you know, just, but keep calling in, absolutely. Okay, now back to you, Rod, and Yehuda, absolutely. So, we're going back to the one state solution in the Middle East, you know, and when I've told this story, again, so surprising, I think we want to honor the objections that bubble up in people's minds, but other people that I've told it to go, right, yes, and that's what they should do in Ireland, you know, the one state solution, not the north and the south, but like this, yes. So it really does catch people, but the objections, the overwhelming, you know, a compelling illusion of reality does rise up, and let's dredge up, all poisons are being dredged up, certainly in this election in America, all poisons everywhere dredged up and in the world to metabolize. So some people say, well, no, I mean, the Israelis will never go for that because the Palestinians will outbreed them. Okay, it's an ugly objection. But my response, and let me toss it back to both of you two, was, well, then we go back to E.O. Wilson, who reminds us that for $26 billion, you know, 2 weeks of horrible cruelty in Iraq, he says we could resolve most human global poverty and save most of the species, because the global hot spots of poverty are the same where species are most under pressure and jobs of stewardship and replenishment. But a chunk of that money would go to the education of women. And when women are educated, they enter the marketplace, they have autonomy, and populations balance out. So does that make sense to you, Yehuda, as an objection and then an address?
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, there is no question in my mind that if you're talking about wars, or specifically the war in Iraq, and the money that is spent there, or the money that is spent here in Israel on the issues of so-called security. Unfortunately, you know, people don't see reality. And fortunately, I may say, but sometimes it takes time until it happens, but it seems as if the spirit of the people influence. It's not seems, I see how spirit of people and communities can influence from one direction to another. You know, in the 20s, in the previous century, in 1920, even Germany was regarded to be the prime top cultural society in Europe. And here you take a society like that, and it becomes a vicious, mad society. And yet, at the same time, you can take some group of society into another direction. And it seems as if it is individuals that come in the right time or come in the wrong time and take a society into a madness or sometimes into a liberation and freedom. And it happens already in the past. I basically think that things, you know, reality is a possibility, as I wrote to you. It's not a predetermined situation in a way. I mean, the possibilities are enormous, and I feel that it takes a person with a vision, some kind of a political leader who is wise and also has this vision, and he can take the people his way and really produce it. For example, Menachem Begin, Prime Minister of Israel in 1977, when he took office, everybody in Israel thought that there's going to be a war, that he's going to conquer Sinai all the way to the Nile, and Israel will be fighting in the north all the way to Euphrates and Hidekel in Persia, in Iran, to create the greater Israel, as if it is sometime explained through the Bible. And we thought we are going to enter into a bloody war. And here this guy, in 1978, just a year later, talks to Sadat about peace and is willing to return all Sinai, just opposite from what the citizens of Israel elected him for. The same guy also made a decision in 1982, after the peace agreement, in 1981, after the peace agreement with Egypt, to bomb the Iraqi nuclear power because of the fact that Saddam Hussein at the time was trying to build a nuclear electrical facility by the French. And he did it in spite of the suggestions or the negative recommendation that he received from the security people, from the military people. So this just showed that it takes a person who has a government to steer it in the way he wants, in a way. So I think that this thing can happen. You know, we didn't think in 1975 or 1978 that the Berlin Walls will fall and the Cold War will end in a way, and Salt One will take into place and actually be executed. We are still waiting for Salt Two, but nevertheless, there is changes that are being made by individuals that influence tens and hundreds of millions of people. And as you say, you know, it can happen that all these trillions of dollars will go in a different direction, in the direction of protecting the planet, in the direction of helping the weak, in bringing up the rights of individuals to live in a dignified way. And you know, I say that Israel and Palestine can serve as an example to different places in the world. There are many disputes in the world between people, in Bosnia, in Herzegovina, in Asia, in South America. And we have an opportunity here. We don't see it yet because we are being confused and being sprayed with all this fear.
Yes, and we do want to metabolize the fear, and let me pitch it back to you, Rod Suskin, in Cape Town, South Africa. Let's bring in also a kind of metaphysic, that, you know, today Israel mourns, Hezbollah exalts the yesterday's exchange of the living and the dead across borders on both sides. Very complex. So in South Africa, as you wonderfully say, and please continue to animate the honoring of ancestral spirits, I remember talking to Joy Harjo, and she said, you know, it's important the dead, you know, we can forgive each other even after death. She has great stories to tell about the dead forgiving their killers. You know, and how might we animate that there are so many dead? There were so many dead, there are so many dead in South Africa, there are so many dead, you know, Palestinians and Israelis and... How do we honor those dead? Yes.
That was a very important issue for us. Firstly, to continue from one particular thing that Yehuda was saying, in the need for a wise and visionary leader, of course, we were fortunate and very blessed enough to have Nelson Mandela. And that was a further manifestation of the ancestral spirit, this wise African leader who came from a great and, in fact, royal African family, who eventually rose above his ordinary human vision or political vision for his country and had a vision for the future, for future generations. And he actually got the talking to happen and created, in fact, that same one-state solution where everyone would return from exile from all over the world and we would all live together and talk about it and work it out. So then when you deal with how do we deal with all that pain, what happened in South Africa, I think, is a very important lesson for the world, and that was our Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And that was led by Desmond Tutu, who everyone will know is a great man himself, the former Archbishop of Cape Town, Nobel Peace Prize winner like Nelson Mandela, and who allowed people to come forth with their stories of their sons and fathers and husbands who'd been tortured and eliminated by the South African government in their thousands, in the most horrendous fashions of that kind of a war. And people told their stories and they sobbed. And the perpetrators were allowed to come forth and apologize. And it really was an enormously cathartic experience. And once again, it was in the spirit of the ancestors. And again, that's to me why it worked, because certainly in Africa, there's the ancient tradition where you sit and talk until a problem is resolved, even if that takes forever. But everyone gets to agree in the end, and that's exactly what happened. So we spoke through our problems, and we had this Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It's not perfect, but it made a tremendous difference. And of course, Yehuda referred to Jerusalem, which is the spiritual capital of the world, and which also will have that same ability to unify people at a fundamental spiritual level that actually has nothing to do with their religion, but everything to do with the spirit that their religion honors. That's how it works.
And also we can envision and maybe feel, you know, that it become an international capital of forgiveness. And I like redefining forgiveness. It was with my great board op, hello, Margot Kelly, that we were like, oh, forgive, we don't want to condone. So I said, all right, let's redefine forgive as meaning to give energy for change. And I, for myself, I said, well, when I define it that way, I feel much more forgiving. We give energy for change, and we seek the forgiveness of the dead. But as you rightly bring up, Rod, so in the Truth and Reconciliation, you know, tell us your story and you will go free. So certainly some people and many of those had to carry, you know, a kind of unfair burden. The relatives of Steve Biko, you know, who his killers said, well, we did it, you know, and now we're going free, you know. And it's very related, you know, Samir Kantar, you know, who just released after, I think, 28 years of prison, you know, only the number of years that Nelson Mandela was in exile. But he did indeed, you know, do at the age of 16, he did, you know, some terrible things and killed a man and beat his 4-year-old daughter to death and so on. So the family of those murdered are like, you know, kinned, in a sense, with Steve Biko. So how did it have enough momentum in South Africa to metabolize that? I mean, in that sense of, doesn't it really does require inviting in something larger than ourselves, yeah?
But that something larger than ourselves happens because it is an experience beyond a dialogue. What no one had really seen in the world before was, firstly, a government, an oppressive regime like the old South Africa, literally hand over, willingly and peacefully, power to its ultimate enemy, who it had defined as terrorist, and who it had driven out of the land, just as the parallel in Israel. And so on the one hand, that itself had a deep effect on people because we were all directly exposed to something that had never happened before. And that same wow moment when you hear about this idea and think, is it, it cannot be, kind of happened at a much deeper level. So that maybe prepared us and maybe made us think, okay, maybe. And then this Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which had never happened in any country, was live on TV day after day after day.
Huh.
I mean, for years on its own channel or however long it was. And that was, we used to sit and watch it, and we all cried. The whole nation sat and cried and had this cathartic experience. Where people were guilty of serious crimes that were not political crimes and involved a lot of murder, they were eventually actually prosecuted for that. So it didn't really allow people to get away with crime.
But the police,
defined as crime in a democracy.
Well, I mean, but the police abuse. I mean, I thought that the policemen who murdered Steve Biko were not prosecuted. Am I wrong?
They were prosecuted.
Oh, they were. Ah.
They were prosecuted.
Uh-huh.
And also, it was also realistic. I mean, those who were guilty of the most heinous crimes, the African tradition, as it would be in any traditional culture, is to forgive but not to forget. So it's not like we suddenly think this person's completely absolved, in the sense of they were still prosecuted in courts of law.
And what I've yearned for the longest time is, again, yes, the power of story, and in some way, let's all ponder this, and Yehuda as well, that the Middle East, and you, I know you have a vision of the unified Middle East and the weapons of mass destruction free Middle East, which goes from Turkey to Egypt, important kind of visual thing to understand. But I've always thought, you know, that to borrow the medicine from South Africa, the Truth and Reconciliation, exactly as Rod just pitched it, and yes, televised, and everyone, you know, listening and weeping night and day, and the role of women in the Middle East, you know, to bring in Scheherazade, again, the power of the story to liberate even the tyrant who has murdered his own heart, or even the person who has suffered great injustice. I think it's Crane Alcott in South Africa has said, love is worth nothing until it has been betrayed, you know, and still keeps going. Just, oh. And so we go, all right, real love, real spirituality. So let it be 1,001 nights, you know, 1,001 nights, and some role also particularly for women to be engaged in the framing of the story, and for women to meet with each other. Is that also part of your vision or the discourse that's beginning to brew in Israel, Yehuda?
Well, women in Israel are very much involved. We still have these things, many things needs to be improved in the society in large. I think we are somehow similar to a Western society with a blend of Eastern society, because we also,
of course,
have,
I mean, Israel had a woman president before most of us did.
Yeah.
Golda Meir.
Yes. Well, some, you know, we have women in the Knesset. We have women as ministers. We have it's something that came out strongly in the last 20 years and really takes. Going strong, I may say, and should go strong to a full equality and the benefit that we can get out of it, all of us.
Well, we're
men and women. But I'm sorry.
No. I just said yes. We're animating. We're putting on our council table for all allies listening and our conversation. You know, speaking to that within everybody out spiraling out into the world. You know, we wonder and we're willing to invite in. You know, a role for Palestinian, Arabic, Middle Eastern, Islamic women and Jewish women to kind of rise to the fore, going, that's enough, boys, on some level. Here we're going to, you know, that in some way we're wondering and seeing, you know, in that sense of the power of storytelling, the power of the woman storyteller, the power of what comes to us as the Arabian Nights and the 1001 Nights, you know, brewed with South Africa. We're going to go right back into this conversation, but you're listening to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our guest today from Tel Aviv is Yehuda Atai, and for our guest today from South Africa, Cape Town, is our great ally, Rod Suskin. So we are calling all allies in place of our annual week-long summer fun drive for KPFA, for Pacifica, for the Visionary Activist Show. We're holding a friend raiser, an ally raiser. So we're still choosing to have this vital conversation, to not preempt it, and to take just these very few minutes to invite, you know, all new subscribers, people who haven't supported this station financially, maybe emotionally, before. And let's remember that Pacifica, the goddess of peace, KPFA is the mothership, you know, founded absolutely dedicated to dynamic peace. It was the original and now the only completely listener-sponsored radio network in America. Everything else gets some corporate underwriting, you know. So we are limiting, so today we're just doing this pitch going, come on in. You know, next week, next Thursday's show will be a 2-hour special of the Visionary Activist Show, in which we will be pitching and pledging and also with fantastic guests. But if you've never pledged before to KPFA, this is a really great invitation opportunity, you know, to let us know that you support this kind of conversation, this kind of imaginative invocation that isn't really to be found. It lives in our souls, but it isn't given voice in mainstream corporate, you know, not yet anyway. But also it is a time of KPFA being increasingly influential, that we can send out these invitational conversations out into the world, you know, set things going. We know that the memosphere, you know, of metaphor and story is the primary strategic arena, you know, for all of our dedicated hearts to kind of set this story going. Just as, you know, Yehuda Atai, you know, in private conversation presented the one-state solution, the Israeli-Palestinian state, and as we discoursed, and we'll go right back into that, it's like, no, amazing, of course, exactly the kind of bold experiment that is completely skookum, connected to the spirits and completely competent for now. You know, we know that dominance is an evolutionary dead end. We will die from it, lest we die to it. We know that all violence, vengeance, really serves colonialism and empire. You know, we want to get some things really straight, regardless of how righteous or vindicated, you know, to react is not free, does not support democracy. So we, who have the luxury of not having seen someone we love die in front of us, we want to amplify our realm of storytelling and response on behalf of those who are under much greater pressure. And that's really what this station and this show is dedicated to. So we're asking you, you know, to call in 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732 to become a new subscriber. You know, really, they'll work out many, many things with you, actually. The $25 member pack, you can call those numbers and find out all that's available. $60, the public affairs pack, $120, the sustainer pack. But more importantly than the fun things that you get, DVDs with Naomi Klein, T-shirts, tank shops, you know, tank tops, all of that, you know, really is we're animating this conversation. We're animating as so that it can attract the molecules of manifestation. We are affirming our kinship and our connectedness. So absolutely, for $10 a month, you can become a sustainer, you know, many things. So the more important part is if you've never pledged to this listener-sponsored radio network, to KPFA, or to this show, the Visionary Activist Show, that will be 12 years going in September, you know, take this opportunity to affirm, you know, to kind of step in dynamically, to let the spirits and the juju and the gods know that you're part of this dynamic conversation, that you are an agent of dynamic peace in the world, by calling 1-800-439-5732, 510 888-848-5732, or pledging online to our many, many teammates who listen online around the world. This show's also podcast as well, by going to kpfa.org and pledge online as well. Okay, now back onward to this. I want also, Yehuda, for you to put on the table, when we had our conversation backstage, you know, so many weeks ago, and I was like, oh, one state solution, no, yes, yes, yes. And you mentioned that you had, you know, organized a symposium in Israel on weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East, that at first the government was like, no, you know, and then they came, right? And this is where you put the facts on the table and also yes. made the convincing, you know, deterrence is over. Yes,
absolutely. I decided to speak to the establishment, as we may say.
Yeah.
In the establishment language. So I set up a symposium at the Center for Strategic Studies in the University of Haifa on the subject of free Middle East weapons of mass destruction, and we invited many of the military people and intelligence and embassies and security people, and it was also broadcast live and translated live in English to many think tanks around the world, whereby we presented the situation that in fact that this is a dead end situation. There is no deterrence. There is a terrible mutual threat on the entire society in the area, because the Syrians and the Egyptians alone have more than 1,200 launchers, live launchers, and thousands of chemical binary bombs that are being defined as the atomic bomb for the poor. And each bomb like this, if it falls in a populated area, can kill thousands, if not 10,000 of people in pain. And essentially, Israel cannot defend itself from these weapons. And the Arab countries like Syria and Egypt never looked at Israel in bold eye, as if Israel does not have weapons of mass destruction. And they took the chemical road. And essentially, there is a stalemate. And it sounds to me very strange why Israel is putting so much energies to stop the 6001 bomb in Iran instead of stopping the first bomb. So actually, I decided to organize this symposium, and it took time to this information to filter down. And even in discussions which I have, I understood that I'm right, in the sense that Israel will be much more secured without weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. But the question that I was asked, how do we get there? And by the way, just yesterday or today, I've sent a whole plan in Hebrew, which I wrote in the last few days, as to an operational plan, a strategic and tactic operational plan as to what Israel should do in order to move this area into a free zone area. And it's going to be on the air on our Hebrew site, probably tomorrow. So
And feel free to mention that site again for those who speak Hebrew.
It's called the Armageddon.org.
It's a slightly unfortunate name, but okay, all right, okay, we can work with it.
Well, it's purposely done here in Hebrew in order we are really focusing towards the Israeli community to really open their eyes to the fact that atomic bomb cannot save us, and what will save us is our wisdom.
Right.
And by living together, we can protect our culture for hundreds of years to come. By living together, we get the best protection. By living together, we will be able to come up with more and more writings and beautiful things that can come out of this area for us and for the entire world.
And when, Rod, when I was describing last night to you, going, please come bring South Africa with you to this radio council, you know, and you kind of went, ooh, you know, because as the mind kind of opens, going, you know, the objections come up and you go, yes, but safety, yes, but wealth, yes, but ingenuity and water. Yes, but, you know, because your mind was also kind of unfolding into like, whoa, right?
Exactly that, because there is the moment of impossibility that you quickly then realize, even if it sounds naive, if you really think about it, it is not, that the only possible way that everything does become peaceful is with sharing and with equality. If people are forced to fight over resources or have the ability to deny each other resources, then you're never going to resolve the problem. And if people argue over whose the land is, you're never going to resolve the problem. But if you live together and share the land and share the resources, you begin to depend on each other. And that's the only thing that can possibly unite everyone together. And that's why I say, if you think about it for a second, you realize you actually can't argue against it. It is the only thing that makes sense and that is most likely to work.
Yes, it's beautiful. And Yehuda, you mentioned when you were describing to me the symposium that you were talking to the military people who were like, no, we could still, you know, and you put on the table, you know, that for starters, you know, Israel has 200 particular kind of nuclear warhead that you said can take out a city of 5 million in 20 seconds and other things too. And then you put on the table who has what, you know, let's just throw it open.
Yes. This information is in the site. I mean, we did a search in the open media in the world, and we collected this information, and we assembled this information in such a way that we showed that who has the capabilities in terms of weapons of mass destruction and what kind of instruments they have to deliver these weapons, whether it's by rockets or by planes and so on and so on, and the quantities and the enormous threatening things that different countries in the area have, including Israel. And essentially, we put it on the table. I would like to say something, Rod, about what you think, if I may, Caroline, about South Africa. And what I have learned tonight from Rod, which is wonderful, is the fact that there is a great hope, because you see, from the story of South Africa, I can see that people at large in their spirit, if we can look at the spirit of people as one spirit, they have so much reconciliation ability in them to reconcile so many tens and hundreds of years of hardship and slavery, and yet go through it, as you describe, through all these media and reconciliation processes and activities, and they have this big heart that people have, and it takes us to ignite it, maybe a person like Nelson Mandela, but it is the spirit of the people that really seeks, all the people wants peace, every person on the individual level.
I think that's so fundamental that we also need to realize that South Africa does illustrate that people would never believe it. But one thing that to this day, 14 years down the line, we still keep on saying that it is amazing that once South Africans who had been enemies of each other for so long, once we were given the permission to like each other and treat each other as human beings, we did, and everyone got along very well and started liking each other. The natural humanity rose to the surface, and I think we have to trust that about ourselves.
And an important part, Yehuda, that you mentioned is when you were talking to some Israeli military people at the symposium who were still saying, no, we could defend ourselves, or first strike, take out the rest of the Middle East. And you said you put your watch on the table and said, go, you know, like a fail-safe exercise. You said,
yeah.
And I mean, I'll hand you the narrative back to you, but you said that the military man you were talking to said, right, there is no deterrence. We would just destroy each other.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, well, there is, you know, for those who understand how these technologies work, they know that there is no deterrence. They know the truth. They have seen the truth in the last Lebanese, the second Lebanese, or 2 years ago. Israel cannot defend itself from rockets. Regular rockets.
And
needless to say, in 1991, Saddam Hussein was able to hit Israel in Tel Aviv, like 200 meters from where I'm talking to you, with a ballistic missile. So they can hit any place in Israel, and we have no means to protect the people here. And at the same time, we can hit any place there, And not only there, we can, you know, the abilities of Israel is to very, very far. And I essentially pointed out that there is no deterrence. And many people who are engaged in this subject agree with me, just that it's not a military decision to go for a free Middle East of weapons of mass destruction. And it's not a security side decision in Israel. The way the Israeli government works is such that this decision lies within the prime minister itself. And he doesn't need the approval of the Knesset, the parliament, even to go and do it.
So we want all that is best, the spirits, the incarnate and the disincarnate, to invite people's better natures to the fore in ways that make us bark with laughter, going whoa. But I think there's a resonance, because you know the exchange that's taking place now, and the two soldiers, Israeli soldiers who were returned who are dead, and that was part of the whole provocation of the horrifically tragic and sad and horrible war last summer, which also created some of the largest pollution in the Mediterranean when the Israeli military bombed the oil containers, and then nobody was allowed to clean it up. But it was over these two soldiers, and at that time it was so poignant because farmers along this really arbitrary human man-made border, you know, on the Israeli side and on the Lebanese side, clearly had more in common with each other. You know, going,
absolutely,
these are people who want to love their families and grow their olive trees and have Venus, a culture, you know, than with those manipulating violence for their own narrow aims or for their own possession of unevolved, reactive, blah, 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 you know, whatever. So it really is a kind of resonance, because yeah, again, the farmers along those borders. So that idea of also invitation. I know a friend of mine who is very active in the Middle East said, well, one of the ways to go is part of what we're doing, you know, here. But he said he had a radio show, you know, in Israel with Palestinian and Israeli doctors, and just simple things, you know, whoever called up, you know, if they were Israeli, it was the Palestinian doctor who healed them, and vice versa. And he also said, you know, soap operas are clearly the way to go in the Middle East, because they're on everywhere, even in the Bedouin tent, you know, as these many different forms we might think of as, you know, informing popular culture with stories of connectedness and kinship. I mean, does that appeal? Does that make sense out there? Rod?
Well,
yeah,
absolutely. I'll let Rod respond first to you.
Yeah, well, Rod, do you have any thought about how stories, you know, can use popular vessels as well? What happened in South Africa? Were there issues addressed? I remember when we did live radio from South Africa a long time ago, you said that part of the you know, horrific and wonderfulness of South Africa is that the radio is much more kind of like, you know, you should die, cause it, much more kind of river, but it was a way of outgassing. Is that part of what you think?
It is very much so, because our tradition is to tell stories and to sit and listen to each other's stories. And people tell their own stories more than anything else is what works for us. But the stories are also the stories of the ancestors. It is a culture that honors the ancestors. And the Middle Eastern cultures, Jewish and Arab, are cultures that honor their ancestors. And those are the stories that we need to listen to. And that's why, as I said, lucky we have the Nelson Mandela figure to embody that. But Israel has got to start elevating those people to hero status, the people who are their wise spiritual leaders. And that's how those stories come out. That's how the right stories come out.
That's wonderful. We're on our way out right now. We really just have a few seconds, but if by the power of this full moon, if you want to send forth a blessing, oh, here we go. Thank you so much, Yehuda Attai in Tel Aviv, One State Solution. Thank you so much, Rod Susskind in Cape Town, One State Solution. And so we send this story out. May it be a blessing to speak to each
Shalom,
person.
Shalom, Rod.
Ah, yes.
Shalom. Shalom to everyone.
Yes, salam alaikum, absolutely. Thanks so much to Margot Kelly in Washington, D.C., and Erica Bridgman in Berkeley.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We will reconvene next week. There'll be a two-hour Visionary Activist special from 2 until 4 on the 24th, and we will reconvene. Thank you, everybody.
Oh, yeah.